Each year, to bring in Asian Heritage Month, Calgary and Winnipeg hold the Fascination Film Festival. The festival celebrates Asian culture and local filmmakers and professionals while bringing communities together to enjoy the art of cinema. Let's chat about Hollywood, cultural representation, the film industry in Manitoba, and the upcoming festival with President Alan Wong.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alan Wong. I'm the president of the Fascination Film Festival and one of the founders. I'm also the executive director of the Gimli International Film Festival. So my life is film festivals right now. But I'm an individual. I'm Manitoba-born individual with a Chinese heritage. My parents are from Hong Kong and the southern part of China. And for many years, I also volunteered with the Asian Heritage Society to put on Asian Heritage Month events in Manitoba.
How did you get all involved in film? Why is it that you felt, yeah, this is something I want to dedicate all my time to, basically?
I've always loved movies. I grew up watching movies. My parents were both very busy working in a Chinese restaurant. They owned a Chinese restaurant. And so I was basically left to myself a lot. And kind of like the television was my babysitter. And so I ended up watching a lot of TV, a lot of movies. And then back then, too, there was like sort of like the rise and subsequent fall of video rental stores. And so like I kind of lived through that in my childhood, right? Like we rent VHS tapes and then it became DVDs. And then now it's just everything's streaming. So it's been a pretty interesting, interesting time.
Yeah, I think for many of us, it's almost a nostalgic thought of this point, going to the video store, specifically like Blockbuster. I remember that going there all the time and you're just looking through all the different like covers of the movies and be like, okay, this one looks interesting. Let's grab that. And sometimes you'd find some amazing gems in there. So I guess it's maybe like unfortunate part of like things advancing that we don't get to have that kind of tactile experience anymore for going through films and movies. But streaming has allowed us to get so many, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I remember I'd spend like an hour just like looking through like, you know, like the bins at Movie Village. Do you remember Movie Village when they had those like giant like sections of like, you know, get three movies for $5 or whatever, right? So I'd be
like, oh yeah, or like the bargain bin at a Walmart.
Exactly. But like I equate that to like doom scrolling on Netflix, you know, just kind of like seeing what you want to see, maybe like, you know, putting it in your list, but then not actually watching something and like doing that for like an hour. So there's a lot of comparisons. Anyways, I obviously love movies. I've worked in movies and I've acted in some stuff, and I'm also the president of ACTRA, which is the Union for Film and Television Actors here in Winnipeg. And I've done sound. I've done some producing. I've worked in a production studio, production office. I mean, in various capacities. And so, yeah, my life has been a lot about, revolved a lot about film. And you know, so to merge that with sort of my love for Asian culture and want the desire to sort of expose more people to Asian culture and also the stories of Asian people not in Asia, right? The diaspora. So to spread those stories, to create a bit of more, I don't know, cultural empathy, a little bit of more understanding amongst society. That those are all sort of the goals of the organization.
And for some people, they might be surprised seeing film festivals out here in the prairies. For Fascination Film Festival, you've got the group in Calgary, and we've got the one here in Winnipeg, and people might be thinking, why? Why in the prairies? Like, what's going on? Like, what is it not in, like, Toronto or Vancouver? But
well,
I think something I've been learning, well, that too, but, like, I've been learning is just how vast the film and television industry is here specifically in Manitoba.
And you know, like I know about this because of wearing multiple hats in the industry, but it is probably one of the fastest growing industries in Manitoba. Last year we did a total of $350 million in production, and so that's like almost $1 million a day. right? Which is the highest level that it's ever been. And so with we have a new studio opened up this past year, Big Sky, and we have news of another one opening up in Niverville in the coming months. And so things are shaking. And then we also have the direct flight to LA now. So in terms of like Winnipeg as a film production hub, it's businesses is booming. That being said, we want to also, you know, develop the community here of emerging filmmakers. There's actually quite a lot of really great emerging filmmakers here. It's a very friendly scene for it. So with resources very readily available, this is what just another way to kind of celebrate our community, celebrate some of these stories and these filmmakers, and just watch some great movies that maybe wouldn't normally come across your radar if you didn't look for it.
You had a call to getting those filmmakers to come send their films out to the Fascination Film Festival. How many people did you have submitting this year?
We opened it up this year quite a lot. Like in the past 2 years, the first year really was only like Calgary and Winnipeg, you know, and then we got some submissions from Toronto and Vancouver because we partnered with those film festivals, with those specific Asian film festivals. And then last year we opened it up to sort of Canada, the United States, and so got quite a few, maybe like 30, 40 submissions from across Canada and the United States. But this year we opened it up internationally and just was inundated with requests and submissions. And so I think total was over 180 short film submissions, which we had to go through. So, which is a lot of time and effort to watching all these films. But then in the end, we actually expanded our short film programming because there were so many great short films. And so we had to like, basically we were going to show 5 feature films, but now we're only showing 4 and we're doing an extra short film program instead.
Wow. So just kind of going through those submissions, how are you feeling about the variety?
Great. You know, like they're all films from made in the past 2 years. And so there was definitely some common themes that we saw, you know, because of the pandemic, a lot of existential sort of topics, a lot of topics about family, a lot of topics about a lot of films about that centered around, you know, identity, and isolation. And so it was very interesting to see some of the different films that we got from all over the world.
When people are going out on the website to kind of register and sign up, what can they expect from this year's event?
They can expect it to be the best one yet, actually. We have a beautiful new venue for the first couple of days. It's at the Inuit Art Center at the Winnipeg Art Gallery, Kamayak. And so we're using their Learning Steps room, which is a 90-seat sort of lecture theater type of space. It's beautiful and it's going to be great and perfect for sort of like what we need it for. And then we're doing events there on the Friday and the Saturday. And then Saturday night, actually, we have a new partnership to screen a documentary called Big Fight in Little Chinatown, which is a fantastic doc. And we're screening that at the Winnipeg Chinese Cultural Center. And they're actually doing a tour across Canada and the United States. They got funding to basically do free community screenings in all these different Chinatowns across the country. And so we're partnering them to hold event on, and it'll be great. There'll be like lots of like, there'll be interesting food. There'll be a Q&A with the filmmaker who's flying in to be a part of it. It'll be great. There'll be some prizes and that'll be a lot of fun. And then Sunday we're back at Cinematheque, which is where we were last year. That'll be a great day as well. We're very excited to be hosting the Canadian premiere of a movie called Past Lives, which got like tons of great reviews and buzz from Sundance and South by Southwest and Berlinale. And Elevation picked it up and they're going to be releasing it in June, but we get this before anybody.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's just
so
amazing.
We anticipate that show is going to be sold out. So get your tickets quick.
This festival is all about celebrating local film, but also just Asian culture and Asian heritage as well. And just kind of going in that vein, in our last conversation, we're talking a little bit about how the industry, specifically out here in like the West and Hollywood, we're starting to see it open up a little bit more to the diversity of the people that call Canada and the United States home. And this past year was just another example of things continuing to expand and grow and go beyond just the traditional, like, yep, this is a Western film, that's it, you know, like white leads, that sort of thing. Because, like, best supporting actor from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. Kiwi Kwan.
Yeah, thank you. I was about to butcher his name, so thank you. And then also there's like RRR, they did a dance performance there.
Oh, yeah.
There's RRR just so great. Much.
What it is now is the identity of Asian cinema, and that sort of like the stories of Asians, even of the diaspora, is starting to take shape a little bit more and become its own thing. And I mean, and this is all kind of, it's a snowball effect, right? Like it all started with, you know, talking about the fact that there was all this tokenism in Western movies and media, but then also the popularization of Asian cinema, right? Korean cinema. Korean movies have been, you know, for a while now, been really like sort of like the pinnacle of Asian cinema, right? And so that is being recognized in the West, and that all kind of stems from, you know, like Parasite, you know, won the Oscar one year, and you know, the Old Boy, you know, the work of Park Chan-wook has been really, really critically acclaimed for many years, and he's still going and has a new movie out this year. And so there's so much going on as the rise of K-pop, right? Like just like Asian culture in general, anime, right? Like the popularization of anime. It was always popular, like, or there was at least a fan base, but that it's just grown so much that, and I see some, you know, I see some Pokemon behind you. I see Totoro behind you, you know? So like the popularization and mainstreaming of all this, like kind of Asian culture has really helped sort of bridge that gap, between, seeing it as this little niche thing to seeing it as, okay, this is, they've got their own identity here in the West. And it makes a big difference, I think, in the acceptance of just normalizing Asians, seeing Asians on screen, like Everything Everywhere All at Once, right? Like an amazing movie, probably one of the best movies, regardless of country or of origin or, you know, story that I've seen in a long time. And just because of the creativity, right? Because of the creativity and the characters, the richness of the characters and who they were. So, it's very exciting.
And I think we're just going to continue to see amazing stories like that. As things continue to grow and we have these ideas spreading, maybe there'll be like international directors that start working on like Hollywood projects, things that were, well, I mean, they're already starting to do that with, I think it's called Star Wars Visions, where they reached out to animation studios across the world to showcase different things and have different perspectives of like just this one kind of setting of Star Wars, but seeing like, oh, what do Japanese studios do, or like a Korean studio do, or like Western studios, like taking all these ideas and building something. And I think it's only beneficial to cinema to have this diversity of thought and creativity coming together.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at even something like Arcane, like the video game, that animated series based on the video game, you know, they worked with a French animation company right on it. But like a lot of the stories and even like some of the creators and that sort of thing, they originated from Asia. But there's also this mix of diversities because it's a very popular like game and.
Yeah, League of Legends.
Yeah, company, right? So like just like this globalization of media, entertainment, and culture is just fusing together because we understand so much more now what other cultures are like, right? And how we can incorporate some of that into what we're seeing in mainstream media.
And like talking about just the influences, like I'm seeing so many people now that are creating films all grew up on anime, and I'm seeing so much anime influences and everything now, and it's just so much fun. What was it, the recent John Wick movie that came out, they had that whole scene in Osaka, and it's just so fun to watch and everything, and just the way they're kind of approached that film in a different style than what you would typically get from your traditional kind of shooter Hollywood movie. And like just how that series has kind of evolved has also been interesting.
Yeah, I haven't seen the latest one yet, but that's true. It's totally exciting. And, you know, I can see like, okay, so you know how right now Marvel and DC movies are like superhero movies are the thing, right? And that's because there's a certain generation that grew up on comic books, right? The next phase is going to be the generation that grew up on anime, video games, like these more in-depth, these other kinds of intensive stories. And I'm excited to see what that next phase of mainstream media is going to look like, because it'll just be, yeah, exactly what you said. It'll be a combination of all these things. And it's just very exciting.
Just the change. And my thought is, I think we're entering a golden age, specifically in animation, with things like Into the Spider-Verse, I think really opened the door to potential creativity that there was a wall for a long time where animation was just kind of, they're trying hard to make it like realistic, but also stylized at the same time. And they just hit a wall. Like when we're looking at all these like Pixar and Disney movies, they're trying to go as much as the technology can go. Huge files in the editing process, but you know, sometimes middling returns in terms of the visual or the excitement level. And then Into the Spider-Verse, I feel just kind of changed everything, because we have, there's Arcane that kind of went in that style a little bit. Mitchells versus the Machines. You have the sequel to Into the Spider-Verse now. Puss in Boots. That movie was really good and going with that style. And then you have the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that's also going in this kind of new creative, like sketchy style that allows for more animated freedom while, you know, taking a little bit of the work and effort off of these animators.
No, I think for a while the focus was on technology, right? Because CGI, we wanted to see how far we could push it and see how far we could take the realism of CGI. And now we've gotten to a point where most modern blockbusters are like at least half, if not more, CGI, right? Like all the superhero movies, it's mostly CGI, you know. So now what is the next phase of animation? It all really comes back down to story, right? It all comes back to if the story is solid, and then you can kind of be creative with the artistic elements of it. It's a very wholesome sort of, it has to be a wholesome process, and it has to, you have to think about all the elements of a movie in order to make it good. You can't just be technologically stunning or visually stunning, and then the story is like pretty generic, right? Like you need to have something more than that. And I think because, you know, we've grown up now with so much media and entertainment, everybody's becoming more and more sophisticated in their tastes, right? Because we've seen it all now, right? Now, how are we going to stay fresh? How are we going to stay innovative and creative and keep people on their toes and, you know, and not be predictable? And so that's the next challenge, I think, for the next generation of filmmakers.
Elevating specifically in animation, because for the longest time, at least out here in the West, animation was always seen as like the kid format. Like, oh, cartoons are for kids. Like, don't worry about the story. It's just something to distract them. Whereas in countries like Japan with anime, it encompasses such a wide array of audiences, because you'll have anime that's designed specifically for children. But then you have some really, really dark adult kind of themed animation. And I think what we've been seeing from even with like kids shows on Disney or like, the Disney Channel with Owl House or Amphibia and stuff like that, where they're pushing beyond it being just a kids show. Of course it's a kids show, but then it has this wide appeal and they're telling these deep dramatic stories at times.
Yeah, and you know, it's and that's great, because there's so many of us, you know, grew up watching animation, like the early days of animation. Like I remember as a kid watching, you know, Land Before Time and all the early Disney movies, you know, and even like Looney Tunes and stuff like that, these early cartoons. I mean, Yeah, it was great, but where are we going with it, right? And it can't just be for kids because we have such a there's another element to it, and it's this creative aspect because it is art, right? Art on paper, basically, moving art on paper. And I think the popularity of South Park, I mean, South Park really kind of broke the mold when it came to having animation that was more adult oriented, right? Adult humor, adult topics, and like really talking about, talking about politics, like making statements, kind of sneaky, making statements in their stories about life and about society. And and it's just kind of kept on going from there, like Rick and Morty and all that stuff. Like, so I could totally see it being even more prevalent in the future, with like dramas and stuff like that. Just people are gonna want to see it. And I think with AI, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that affects animation in the future, because you'll just be able to get a new level. There's gonna be a new level of animation that's gonna be coming out. It will be different, and I think that that's how artists like animators will need to sort of differentiate themselves, because they'll need they I don't know if they'll be able to compete with AI when it comes to making things look real, right? But they will be able to compete when it comes to creativity, and that's some of the good things about the arts, is that it's you can't replace it. You can't replace it with computers, and no matter how sophisticated an AI will get, true creativity has a sort of intangible humanism to it.
Well, yeah, there's the whole a story behind people creating something. You could have an AI that basically creates something, you put it up in a museum and it's like, look at it, and then you have people look at the other ones. But the one that was created by a person has a story behind it. And I think that completely changes everything, that you know that there's a history, effort, thought, pain at times that goes into a work, and that creates the whole antithesis of it. And AI can be a very useful tool for doing things, but yeah, it'll never replace artists. I think they made an anime where all of the backgrounds were AI generated and they were great, but they lost a little bit just in terms of like changing things, because sometimes when you're setting up a scene, you'll want to change things afterwards. But we could have a whole conversation about AI within
Yeah, this could be a podcast. This could be a podcast, man.
for the Fascination Film Festival, celebrating Asian culture and celebrating Winnipeg creators. So, why don't you tell me a little bit just about the industry and the p creators that you're meeting here in Winnipeg?
It's a small community. A lot of us, know each other, or if not, I mean, like, we're really only a couple of degrees of separation away when it comes to knowing each other. And there's more and more, I think, young talent that I'm seeing coming up in the industry now, like Asian with Asian heritage, right? Like a lot of great Filipino, because we have such a strong Filipino community here, a lot of great Filipino filmmakers coming up, and talent, just like in other areas too, like, graphic design, wardrobe, whatever, right? Like all these different facets of filmmaking that collaborate to produce the final result. One thing that I will kind of talk about a little bit is we have an award this year that we're presenting for the first time, for an emerging filmmaker, and that's this award is named in tribute to Aaron Hembrador, who was a young filmmaker who passed away this past year, who was, the winner of two awards at our last Fascination Film Festival in 2022. And so, obviously that was a shock to the community. A lot of people were friends or had worked on her projects with her, and so we wanted to find a way to pay tribute to her, and she was really was an emerging talent. Like all of her work was really solid, and it was getting better and better, and she was working to develop her first feature. And so we just feel it was a really sad sort of like star that was snuffed out a little bit too soon. And so to celebrate her, we've partnered with Frank Digital to create this award for an emerging filmmaker that'll give them a $1,000 cash prize, but as well a 200 250 sorry not 250 $2,500 credit, rental credit from Frank Gear, which is their rental division. So that'll go a long way towards helping a filmmaker make their next short film and develop their career.
part of a Fascination Film Festival is also kind of to kick off, what do you hope people are thinking about as we head into this month?
I think the Asian Heritage Month has always been a little bit, it seems like it could be like a bit insular, right? Like it's only for the Asian community, but it's not. It's really to celebrate Asian community, Asian culture, but also Asian contributions to Canada, right? And so there's lots of events on this month or the month of May. Our festival is just one of many events that are happening. And so I would encourage anyone to just go experience it. It's a beautiful culture. There's beautiful things going on. And, you know, you don't have to be Asian to appreciate it. And I think, you know, you're someone who appreciates Asian culture. And so you can kind of attest to that. Not everybody is on that same wavelength, right? They think, oh, that's for Asians. We don't, not for us if they're not Asian, but that's not true. It's for everybody. So I'd encourage you to encourage everybody to, you know, keep an open mind and come check out something.
I mean, that's what it means to be Canadian, right? To celebrate your culture, but at the same time, celebrate others' cultures with them, bringing this whole identity of what it means to be Canadian, of all of these diverse backgrounds coming together and building an amazing tapestry of backgrounds and identities into all facets of life here.
You know, that's what it's like to grow up here too. For me anyways, I watched a lot of TV and movies when I was younger, you know, that had those white characters or black characters. And I never thought that it wasn't for me. I could always find something to relate to. Like one of my favorite movies of all time, Lean On Me, right? Or Stand By Me, or Lean On Me. No, it's Lean On Me about the school, the principal in the school and turning that school around and stuff. One of my favorite movies of all time, Shawshank Redemption, right? Like some of these like great movies, the greatest movies, the greatest stories don't necessarily have anything to do with culture or a specific culture, and it can be for everybody.
Yeah, so there is a ton of exciting things that are coming up at the Fascination Film Festival. I mean, the creator of Kim's Convenience is going to be there. First-time Korean-Canadian director Celine Song. So there's going to be a lot of exciting things. Where can people go to get their tickets or where to find out more about the events?
The easiest way to do it is just to go to our website, fascination.ca. That's where the portal will be for you to be able to check out either Winnipeg or Calgary's programs. And then you can click through to get to the page where you can purchase tickets. And our box office is online right now. So you just have to create an account through Eventive, and you'll be able to like either purchase passes that you can use to book your tickets or purchase individual tickets as well.
The Fascination Film Festival takes place May 4th to 7th.
Migraine love.
Advance.
Anti-racism is the active practice of opposing racism and promoting racial equality. Although sometimes it feels like racism is a thing of the past, unfortunately, there's still systemic and overt racism in our communities. In response to newcomer communities' experiences of racism in sports groups, the Anti-Racism in Sport campaign was started. This past weekend, the campaign held its Access and Inclusion Sports Conference. Before the event, I had the opportunity to talk with Daria. So let's take a moment to hear a little bit from her.
My name is Daria Herrera-Palmer. I'm a project consultant with the Anti-Racism in Sport campaign that's hosted by Immigration Partnership Winnipeg.
So, a conference is coming up this weekend. There's going to be a ton of panels, speakers, and it's going to be really exciting. But before we get into all of that, I'd like to learn more about the Anti-Racism in Sport campaign. I guess let's just start with, why was it started?
So the Anti-Racism Sport campaign was started really because we were hearing from our communities, especially our newcomer communities, about the racism that they were facing in sport groups, particularly soccer. And so one thing that the community groups wanted to do was understand exactly what was going on and then also addressing it as well, because a lot of people still believe that racism doesn't exist in sport, whereas a lot of our research has proven that it still exists, it's ongoing, and it really needs to be addressed.
Yeah, it's one of those ongoing struggles that it feels like something like, racism, it isn't really a big thing anymore. It's just, you hear it sometimes in the news, but it's like, no, there are still some systemic challenges that we face within our communities. So it's really cool to see an initiative and a campaign like this that addresses, at least within the area of sports, and of course that will bleed out into other aspects of the community as well.
Exactly. And so we have a multifaceted campaign that really focuses on, as I mentioned before, our research, which has done focus groups, but then also a literature review, an environmental scan, to school presentations, stakeholder training for athletes, coaches, parents, administrators, a public awareness campaign where we highlight the instances of racism in sport, but then also really highlight the successes of people in spite of racism in sport. And then also our anti-racism in sport campaign for organizations to sign on to, so we can provide them resources for them to work towards becoming an anti-racist organization.
What sort of things are you seeing as the campaign has going on? I guess before all of that, how long has the campaign been going on in general so far?
It started December of 2020, and so we've been going on for a couple years now and really sort of going through different phases. So our first phase was really getting that research off the ground as our foundation, and that's really informed a lot of the activities that we've done throughout the campaign. And what we found throughout the research is that racism is still very prevalent in sport, and that it's not only systemic, but it's also overt racism and microaggressions that are happening. And they continue to happen. And as we go forward into our activities and we do a lot more consultations, we've been doing a lot of intersectional consultations as well with disability groups or with youth groups, and understanding where does that really lie? What are the issues? And then what are the recommendations from the community? And I think that's what stands us apart as a campaign, is it's really community driven. It's not top down. It's very much like bottom up and throughout as well.
What are some of those recommendations and suggestions that you've been hearing from the community?
A big one is representation at all levels. So when we're looking at representation, we're not just looking at representation as athletes, but we're looking at representation of coaching, but administrators, of board members. The really having people in the decision-making seats is really what's important, and making sure that the people who are making those decisions look like the community that they serve.
The more that we're seeing in terms of data of, immigration and the people that are moving here to Canada, we are continuing to become more and more diverse here in the country, and we need to see that represented within all aspects of our communities. So that is very important to see. And I guess, what are some other things that they've been talking about? So they're talking about representation, so in athletes, leadership, coaches, that sort of thing. What other things are they looking at?
A big piece is training. So understanding what racism is, what does it mean in sport, and what is anti-racism, and what does it truly mean to be an anti-racist? And it's not about, there's a big difference between you know, standing on the sidelines and saying nothing and actually being anti-racist and doing something. And those are two very distinct, because one, even though it's an inaction, it's still an action, but it's an action towards the wrong direction. So you want to make sure that if you're being anti-racist, that you're given the tools that you need, especially as a referee or as a spectator. What can you do? Or even as a coach and a decision maker, what type of policies need to be in place? And then how do you implement those policies? So training is a big piece, and we're looking to train all sports and all provincial sport organizations, all clubs, and everyone at every level, so that they understand what does it mean to be anti-racist and what they can do in their roles.
Yeah, in terms of discrimination and racism, there's no such thing as neutrality in a situation like that. You're either, as you mentioned, you don't say anything, which kind of makes you maybe not complicit, but you're not actively dealing with the hatred and things that are kind of growing within communities. So yeah, having that approach of being active and against those things is really important. What can we as a community continue to do to, you know, fight injustice and continue, as particularly in sport, make it more accessible to all peoples?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is just when decisions are being made, is that they're intentional decisions. We're not just making decisions because, you know, it's a way we've been doing them for a long time, but we're doing them because we're trying to get towards equity is sort of what we're looking to. And I think that needs to be at the forefront, especially when we're looking at the recommendations from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and incorporating those, and always just being mindful about how are we being inclusive? Are we being inclusive? And how can we be more intentional about that? I think that's a broad spectrum sort of answer for it, because there's no one answer to say, how do we eliminate racism in sport? But there's little things that we can do. And I think intentionality about that is, how do we make sure that we're inclusive as an organization? How do we make sure that we're diverse? How do we make sure that we have representation on our boards? If we look around at our boards and we realize there isn't a lot of representation and there isn't intersectional representation, that should be sort of, you know, like a light bulb, like, oh, okay, we have to make sure that we have representation here so that we have everybody's voices and we're able to hear everybody's concerns.
Having more diversity in all aspects of our communities is only going to allow us to become stronger. When we're talking about sports, you never know who's going to be that next big player who could be playing on Team Canada at the Olympics, or being someone that in like 10, 15 years, we're saying like, wow, this person is going through these high level of sports, and we're really excited to say, hey, they're Canadian. Hey, they were a part of our community. We helped build them up together to build this. And it's only going to be possible if we continue to take down hurdles, remove barriers, and provide opportunities for everyone to thrive.
Exactly. And I think that's what one part of anti-racism is doing in part of that. And that's another reason why we're having our conference that's coming up in a couple days, because when we look at access and inclusion, it isn't just about anti-racism, but it's all that intersectional perspective. You know, what does access and inclusion mean to disability groups? What does access and inclusion mean to Indigenous groups? So we're really looking at that holistic perspective of access and inclusion instead of an umbrella term. And what can we each do within our sport organizations to make a difference in all of them?
Yeah, well, how about we jump right into it then? So the conference coming up this Saturday, just looking over some of the things, it's going to be a really exciting time. People coming together to work towards solutions to some of the systemic issues that we see within our systems. How about you just give us a quick walkthrough of what that day is going to look like?
Yeah, so it's going to start off bright and early at 9 a.m. And we're starting off with a great session on anti-racism, but it's not the project consultants who are going to be running this. This is actually going to be our youth advisory committee that we've brought together, from youth 18 to 25, who are really advising us and consulting on, you know, what are they feeling that needs to happen in the sport community to really create an anti-racism atmosphere. And so their presentation is going to be on addressing the lack of representation in coaches and administration, and really focusing on that as their specific topic. So it'll be a really great piece from hearing from youth in our community and understanding the perspectives they're coming from and implementing their advice as well. We also have organizations from the disability groups, inclusive and recreation opportunities for people with disabilities, to like breaking barriers. We're very excited about that one. We also have a presentation on the sport experiences of women and girls from the Canadian Women in Sport. And we also have a Rainbow Resource Center and Out There Winnipeg doing a presentation on the awareness and inclusion in sport for the 2SLGBTQ+ groups. And then a panel we have, like, we have so many things. We have a panel on newcomers and creating welcoming and culturally safe space in sport. And then also Indigenous access and inclusion to sport with the Manitoba Aboriginal Sport and Recreation Council. So it's a packed day, but it's going to be a really great day.
I really appreciate that there is opportunity for youths to speak or youth leadership, because that's something that oftentimes the opinions and thoughts of youth can often be just kind of brushed over, like, okay, kid, you don't have the experience or wisdom to talk about this situation, sort of thing. But youth can come at things at such a new angle that, you know, if you are older, you may not never think of the ideas or solutions that they may come up with. So I think that's great to have that variety in terms of age, as well as disability and members of the 2SLGBTQ community.
And I think that's what we really want to strive, is that we're looking for that intersectional lens when we look at what does access and inclusion mean. A lot of the times, as I sort of mentioned before, is that people use that umbrella term of access and inclusion and they kind of just drop it there, or diversity and inclusion, but they don't really talk about the specifics of what does it mean to be diverse and inclusive. And I think that's what we want to point out, is we mean these very specific things and we're making these very specific recommendations. And that way organizations can take that in and say, what can we do? Oh, this is what we can do. Great. This is how we're going to acknowledge that within our organization and move forward.
In terms of racism and just in improving diversity and inclusion, there's no such thing as just a one-stop solution. You can't just, here's the Band-Aid for that. We're done. We solved it. It takes a lot of work, and it takes so many different pieces in order to address the intricacies of, you know, that sort of situation and system.
And I think that, you know, when people speak, we need to hear them. When people in our community speak, we need to hear them. We really need to acknowledge it and then also engage them and listen and apply what they're telling us to. Because if we don't, we're just, you know, we're not making any progress, and we're going to keep having the same issues that we've been having forever. So we're hoping that this really, you know, moves the needle a little bit forward, and next year we'll do it again and we'll have different topics. And that's sort of the idea of this conference, is that it's, you don't just come once and you learn and then you walk away. It's a learning journey for everybody. And how can we continue to implement? How can we do different things that will, you know, make it a safe environment for everyone to participate in sport?
And I noticed something on the website for, in terms of tickets and registration, is that you had a free option. Is this part of...
Exactly. So we do have a $15 ticket, which is your general ticket, but we also have a barrier-free option. We don't require anybody to prove their type of barrier, but if it's a barrier-free, which means a free registration, we're happy to have everybody, and we really want to make sure that everyone can attend this, regardless of whether they can pay or not.
Who's all registering for this program? Is this members of the community that are coming in?
It's a variety of different organizations. There's community participants that are there. We're going to have different sport organizations, like provincial sport organizations. Community sport clubs are also coming. We have representatives from administration, including the city of Winnipeg, who's also attending. So it'll be a really diverse community. And as part of the conference, at the end of the conference, we're having a reflection and takeaway section. So we're going to break up into different groups so that organizations can really think about how are they going to take the information that they learned from the day and go back to their diverse organizations, and how are they going to implement them. And I think that's a really great way to incorporate everyone to the conference.
Yeah, continuing to get the community involved, getting them to think, because then next year they'll have a whole year to think about, oh yeah, these are some of the things, and like, oh, we've worked on this. Oh, let's approach at it this way. It's only a beneficial way.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're hoping for.
In terms of the panels and things, what is one that stands out to you that you're really excited to listen to?
I think what's new this year, I think, for us is that youth group. I think that a lot of the times, as you had mentioned before, sometimes youth get discounted because they would be considered inexperienced, right? But a lot of the times, I think we discount that experience as really valuable experience and really genuine and raw experience as well, because it's something that they're going through now. It's not something that they're reflecting upon, you know, years later. I'm really excited to see their perspective and how their view of the future their, you know, idealistic view, which I think we really need to incorporate more as well. It's not only about, you know, what can't we do, but it's what can we do and what could we do, I think is something that's really looking forward. We're really looking forward to hear from the youth about.
And it's something that's going to be affecting them for a long, long time, right? They're coming into it and they're going to be living through those changes. So the more we can implement them and see, you know, what they want to see, it can build the future for them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really great intersectional group from really diverse, and it's, their recommendations are very sound. And I think it's great to have that perspective, and we're going to continue to have, you know, intersectional perspectives as part of the campaign and as part of our conference.
For the Anti-Racism in Sport campaign, what are we kind of looking ahead towards? What are some maybe new projects or those like conversations that are going to be happening? Of course, there's the conference that's happening this weekend, but you know, what's sort of the plans after that?
Well, what's really great is we received some funding from the provincial government from Sport Culture and Heritage, and to help us with our public awareness campaign. So that's another thing, is you'll be seeing us a little bit more in the next few months, sort of out there and promoting the information that we have, and then also the trainings that we have as well, because it's a really great resource for organizations to look for, and how do what's their first step in becoming an anti-racist organization. And we're hoping to get that word out a bit more, especially through that promotion.
And it's a great time because, as you know, lockdowns have ended for COVID, people are going to be kind of biting at the bit to get out there, building those kind of community engagement activities, like having more sports and everything. So being out there is a perfect opportunity right now.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So I think it'll be really great. I think it's a leverage point that we can have with our community. And we're hoping to have more programming in the future, just waiting on some grants and seeing if we get them.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm really hoping to hear from you more about that. I'd love to just see how this campaign continues to evolve and works towards more equitable and equal futures for everyone.
Yes, me too. And I hope that we can bring you along in the journey.
Fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to share about the campaign or the conference?
We just printed out these infographics. You can get them at Sport Manitoba, and there's a few other places. I'll have to get back to you on exactly those locations, but you can pick up these infographics, and I can send that to you as well, so you can have an image of that if you'd like. And it's a really great thing that people can put up at their sport communities and also at their clubs.
So if someone is interested in learning more about the Anti-Racism in Sports campaign, where should they go?
They should go to our website, antiracismsport.ca, or they should follow us on social media. We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk, and have yourself a good one.